Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That music means we welcome, of course, to the program, the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, I told you that we were driving down to the Gulf, and we listened to the whole broadcast on Saturday. I guess now as we've wrapped up the whole season, we've got the entire picture. How do you kind of look at a 48 win season that weirdly feels like a disappointment?
Yeah, I've had that question a couple of times, brother. I think it's understandable why people think it's a tad disappointing. However, like you said, 48 wins and in the Western Conference, and you're basically looking back at three games where you lost in the last possession, three straight home games. It very easily could have been a 51 win season and the, you know, the three seed. But it wasn't. And you had injury issues all season. Ja Morant missed 32 games. Obviously, Brandon Clark did not come back from a knee sprain. You missed Desmond Bane for a stretch. You lost Zach Edey for a stretch. Those are key components. And then obviously the Jalen Wells situation, which was just really hard to watch, you know, tough for the young man. And obviously he's going to make first team all NBA rookie. He was a finalist for rookie of the year. I thought the right guy won it at the end of the day. I think Stephon Castle really came on strong after, you know, feeling his way through, but he was playing just phenomenal at the end of the season. And I think Zachary Richichet kind of overtook Jalen after that injury, which he looked good at spurts, but I think, you know, Jalen did a phenomenal job. But you look at it and you think, okay, you know, where were you? And at the break, I think, you know, being 36-18 had everybody with these lofty expectations. I mean, even I was thinking, okay, well, cool. You're not going to be in the play-in tournament. You're a top six at worst, but you got a tough schedule ahead. Now you get tested. And quite honestly, they just didn't answer those tests. And they alluded to that in their exit interviews, that they've got to play better against the better competition, that, you know, it's great that you beat up on all the sub 500 teams. And it's great that you had opportunities to win games against really good teams, but didn't come through, but you got to make that happen. And the team is young. I get that. And people say that they are chronologically and age wise, they're one of the younger teams in the league. They've got experience, you know, Oklahoma City's got experience, but playing together in continuity matters. And you didn't have a lot of that this year for various reasons. One, obviously nobody played with Scotty last year or really played with Vince Williams. Vince has been around, but he never really had a role. And Zach Edey and Jalen Wells are new. And even last year, Jaren takes a role that he's the lead guy because everybody else was hurt. Desmond was hurt and Ja was hurt. Marcus Smart was hurt. But you had lineups at the end of the year that hadn't played a minute of NBA basketball together. That's really tough to overcome when you're going against a Thunder team that's had the same five guys. You know, they added Hartenstein this year, but four of those five guys have played together for 3 years, and they play all the time together. And so that's one thing you can look at. But also, you know, they did not take very good care of the basketball all season. So I think that's the disappointing thing. The offense was fun to watch. It started with a, you know, just basically a five out, and teams kind of caught on how to defend that. Obviously, the coaching change brought in some more high pick and roll actions. And I thought even at times where maybe their numbers were down, they were still playing fast, but they've got to cut back on the turnovers. And I think that's where the frustration comes in. It seemed like a lot of self-inflicted wounds. And a lot of times where it just felt like when you were struggling that the rope got let go of. And, you know, Desmond and John, Jaron all alluded that, hey, look, it's on us. You know, we've got to look in the mirror, and everybody's got to look in the mirror and start there. And come back with a better energy, a better effort, a better attitude. And, you know, what happened to Taylor Jenkins, it falls on our shoulders. What happens with Tuomasi Salah is going to fall on our shoulders, and our success falls on, and failures fall on our shoulders. And that's kind of the way it was put. You know, I don't want to say it verbatim because I wasn't at the exit interviews, but and I think also looking what happened in game three and even game four, you know, even to be honest with you, even in game two, you cut it to eight in game two in Oklahoma City, and you had the momentum and you threw away three straight possessions, and they don't miss those opportunities. That's why they're the one seed. So I think that's where the frustration builds in. It's, you know, you look what happened to Miami, and they're just not as good as Cleveland. It's just bottom line, plain and simple. They're not on that level. I don't think the Grizzlies are far off of the level of the Thunder. They're not quite there, but they're not far off. They lost every game, you know, in the regular season by double digits. But in three of those games, they were right there. And one of them, they had a lead with 6 minutes to go. And that's where they need to take strides forward. They need to finish teams off. I've jokingly said at times with this group that it seems like they're allergic to prosperity. Like, they get big leads and they just go, okay, we're good. We'll just slow down now. They've got to find that next drive. Like, you got them down 20, you want to put them down 30 and put them away. Not, okay, we'll just run a couple of plays and throw a couple of passes. The NBA is too explosive now. I mean, you watched last night in Houston, and I was at the game, and, you know, they're up 30 points, and people are going, you know, the Rockets fans are dancing in their seats, and everybody's excited. And I was like, you know, pump the brakes. You got a lot of time left on that clock. You know, make sure that you still go out and finish it off. Like, let's not, you know, give them a glimmer of hope. And you look down the stretch, and Steve Kerr pulls all of his guys, and Ime Udoka has to leave his guys out there. And I think that's going back. I kind of remember the same thing in Memphis when the Grizzlies a couple seasons ago beat the Warriors by 50 or, you know, 49 or whatever it was in game five. And you saw Steve Kerr just kind of let it go. I was like, all right, we're not winning this game. We're not going to win it. It's all on their side. Let's get our guys out. Let's not put any unnecessary mileage on them. Let's not put them in any unnecessary risk harm. And let's go, you know, get ready for game six. And I thought it's brilliant when you think about it. It's like, all right, look, touche, you won this one. I'm not quitting, but I'm going to play these guys. And these guys are going to run actions that we're going to see what works against your guys. If that makes sense. Now you can test some things out because you've already kind of let go of the rope. You have Pat Spencer and, even though Cam Spencer apparently got ejected from the game last night, yep. Even though he wasn't playing, mm-hmm. it was funny. Zach Sarva called Pat Spencer Cam Spencer, and I was like, "Huh, I didn't know Cam was here tonight. Good for him." But now you throw some plays in there that you want to see how they defend them. What do they do? Maybe some things that they haven't seen you run with your group. I think it's brilliant. I mean, I think what Steve Kerr did last night is really thinking ahead. Now, maybe I'm overanalyzing it and Steve Kerr is saying, what are you talking about? I just pulled my guys so nobody got hurt. Even then, I still think that's brilliant. So you go back and look at this group, you've got to execute down the stretch. You've got to figure out how to not throw passes that you just assume. I said it at times this year, and I'm not trying to pick on the guys, but there were times this year where it looked like they thought they were in a shoot around. They were just throwing a pass just because it's what the action says to do, and you don't throw it with any precision or zip or anything. And NBA players are too good for that. And you're kind of going through the motions. And at times that does work in a game. But when you're behind, you got to lock in. You got to go meet the ball. You've got to go help a guy out. The number of near 5 second calls this year was remarkable. And the number they got was remarkable, including one at a critical moment. But that's just, to me, that's waiting too long to get into your set. So it can be fine tuned. It can be tweaked. And I don't think you look at this season as an unmitigated disaster. It wasn't. It won 48 games. And you know, they faltered down the stretch. The thought of what could have been is what is leading people to that notion that it's disappointing.
Yeah, and I think also because, you know, as I was listening to your broadcast on Saturday, I think the other thing that made it really frustrating to watch is, as you kept pointing out, the same mistakes that plagued them in December were the same mistakes that plagued them, in April. And the fact that, like, you know, like you said, even in game two, they kind of got back in the game and then just so casual with the basketball. You can't hold on to the leads. And I think that was what made it frustrating. But I think that's also the kind of the larger question I have is, how do you balance between, admittedly, Zach Kleiman says, hey, we're not good enough, we got to get better, versus, you know, I think the problem was whoever played the Thunder, we're going to face that fate. And maybe we're feeling a little differently if they're in one of the other series. So how do you kind of weigh between what's overreacting to a bad matchup and a bad series versus what they need to do to actually get better?
I think it's simple. First of all, you're going to have to play them at some point. And if you play them in the first round, the second round, or the conference finals, you're going to have to go through them. I think that's pretty obvious. And you can take a page out of their book. When you watch them, did you ever see anybody just kind of lazily jog up the floor?
No, everybody moved with purpose, whether it was offense,
they moved. Defense,
and they were constantly moving, and they always had a purpose.
And moved the basketball with purpose and played on the defensive end with purpose. And yeah, of course, there's plays they're going to screw up. It's a 48-minute NBA basketball
game. A lot of possessions.
Teams make mistakes. Nobody runs a perfect 48 minutes where you don't miss an assignment, miss a pass, throw a ball away, do whatever. But you look up and they were damn near close in game four, because you're looking up and you're going, okay, the Grizzlies are taking better care of the basketball. Only problem is, so are the Thunder. You still have 8 turnovers to their 4. That's 4 shots. You still have them just getting a hand on a ball. Like, they're not going to get the offensive rebound, but they're going to disrupt you getting the defensive rebound, and they're going to keep it alive potentially. They're going to get a hand on the ball. And, you know, I think the one glaring, and I'm not trying to pick on John Conchar because he had no idea, but John Conchar goes in for a rebound in game 2. Whoever Lou Dort was being defended by, I can't remember, vacates the backcourt and starts heading off into the offensive set. Well, Lou Dort says, okay. And he runs in and taps the ball from behind out of Conchar's hands, because John doesn't know he's coming. It wasn't John's man. And John was just going up to get a rebound and start the set. Instead, it's poked out of bounds off of John, or poked away, and the Thunder pick it up and they get a 3-point shot. And you're like, what? Like, you can't not go up and secure the ball. But I get it. It's human nature. You don't think anybody's near you. I'm just going to go get this. Go get it. Go get it with a purpose. And I think that's where they're going to have to find that joy and passion again. And, you know, it's funny. Like, you watch the way they played when they beat Minnesota, and that was the last time they had a fully healthy roster. And you watched how they were that year, doing all the things the Thunder are doing, the group interviews, the group pictures after wins the Grizzlies started doing. Joe Murphy, our team photographer, who does some amazing work, took pictures of these guys after wins. They would say, hey, get a team picture. You don't see that. You don't see guys doing that. You see guys, you know, now sometimes get in there, but like Jimmy Butler's shooing off Buddy Hield the other night after the Warriors win in game 4. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to get out of here. We'll talk in the locker room. Like, where the Thunder are all there together, and they get along and they hang out and they do those things. And talking to their people, they said, it's just camaraderie. And there's a certain joy that comes with playing with guys you like being around. And, you know, we were fortunate enough on this trip that my son and I are on to go down to the field and met Tigers first baseman Spencer Torkelson, who was a former first round pick. And, you know, I just said, hey, man, you're a fun team to watch. And he goes, we really love playing the game of baseball with each other, like on the same squad. And I'm like, man, that's like refreshing to hear a professional athlete say that, because they do. And it shows. And when you play with guys that you want to be around, it does show. It really, really does. And, you know, when you're frustrated or whatever, I get it. But you have guys pick you up. And for whatever reason right now, it just didn't seem to click after the All-Star break for this group. It didn't seem to be that same unbridled joy and passion in the ball movement. You got guys playing hard. No one can sit here and tell me that Scottie Pippen Jr. laid down, that anybody laid down. But you had moments where it just looked like, oh, here we go again. And the mental toughness has to improve. How does that happen? Maybe a veteran presence in the locker room that's been through some battles. I think the position needs you need, obviously, with Brandon sustaining that injury, the rebounding weakness was glaring with Clark out of the lineup. So I think you need another rebounder, and I think you need a true facilitator for that backup spot. You can run Scotty as your backup. Combo guard, he can be out there with Ja. He can be up with Ja and Dez, and he fits better when he's not asked to facilitate the offense, I think. That's just my opinion. I'm not knocking Scotty, but you get a guy like a Tyus Jones. I mean, he was the perfect example of that. So I think they need to look at that. Now, how do you do that with the way your salary cap is structured with no first-round pick, 2 second-round picks? You have some expiring money. You're looking at signing Jaren Jackson in the to an extension in the offseason. What are you going to do with Santi Aldama? These are all the things that will dictate that. I think it would be somewhat foolish to just go in and just, make wholesale changes. This is not a blow it up and start all over again situation right now. But yeah, there's some things that need to happen. And I think more so you look at, hey, we were good. We weren't just brutally bad. Now, you were not good against really good teams after the All-Star break. Why was that? Were there injuries? Was there dissension in the locker room? Was there something away from the game that led to you not being able to execute against elite teams? That's the question. And, only the guys in that locker room will be able to answer that and figure that out.
What are some lessons that you hope this team would take from this year and apply to next year?
Nobody feels sorry for you. Nobody. You're not the only team that doesn't get calls. You're not the only team that has, people after you. I get it. Like with all the stuff around your best player, there's that tendency to just look, everybody's out. Nobody's out to get you. Nobody's out to try to do that. I mean, like, look, is it evident that the league is trying to send a message to your best player, to John Morant? It seems that way. Yeah. However,
one can easily make the case.
Yeah, you can make the case. However, even with that said, that shouldn't affect the 48 minutes you're on the court. If you're not getting calls, fight through, battle through it. Figure out a way to protest what is happening, but without being so demonstrative on the court, without being so, woe is me with the look and the body language, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And, I sat with an official, I don't want to say who, and we had a long conversation a couple of years ago. And the first thing he said to me was, he's like, man, can somebody tell Dylan, just to tone it down a notch? Like, it's like 5 seconds into a game and he's screaming at me and F-bombing me. And I said, well, that's how he plays. You know that. You guys understand that. He goes, yeah, but come on, 5 seconds in. And I said, yeah, well, you're also talking about an organization that had their head coach teed up by Mark Davis 8 seconds into a game. It's going to be hard for you to convince me that there wasn't some carryover from their previous thing. He goes, oh, I know. So they do understand that. But you can't keep looking at, look at us, we'll feel sorry. I don't necessarily believe that they do that, but they've got to find that mental toughness again. That toughness of, yeah, this is